Então, vou me introduzir em português e vou palestrar em inglês. Mas sou Richard Esplin, trabalho com a Fresco Software. Somos negócio de gerenciamento de conteúdo. Eu trabalho na área de engajamento dos desenvolvedores em nossa comunidade mundial. Mas peço desculpas que vou palestrar em inglês porque meu sotaque é bem forte e espero que todos podem me entender. So we'll talk for just a minute about content management and what I wish I knew when I was a brand new developer. And as I was thinking about how to talk about how to teach people some of the things I wish I knew, I think the core idea is the idea of patterns for content management. And probably the best title that I could come up with is Why Relational Won't Cut It. That a relational database is a tool we use all the time, and it's not a tool that meets every need, especially content management needs. But a lot of the time, as open source people, we run into some of our businesses, they want to solve SharePoint type problems. They have SharePoint on their brain, and they're thinking about SharePoint as a technology. And this is how you can address some of those problems on an open source stack. So we're going to talk a bit about why content management's important. We're going to talk a bit about best practices. I'll give you an introduction to the leading pattern for content management as an API. And then I'll give you a few examples. We'll go through some code. But first I want to ask, who here has used a content repository like Alfresco or Nuxio or one of these platforms before? Anybody? A couple, but most people here have not. So that's good, because that's who this is targeted to. And you who raise your hand, hopefully I'll give you some good ideas of how to explain this and of how to explain this to new developers, new people on your team, and maybe give you a tool or two that you didn't know about before. So what is Alfresco? Alfresco is an enterprise content management platform. We work on the cloud, we work on-premise, we synchronize between the two. We are also an API for content applications. This same API can be used in the cloud. It can be used on-premise. It makes it really easy for you to synchronize between the two. We also understand that tablets are the device of the future, and more people are using mobile devices. And for mobile devices to be successful, they need to meet the needs of the organization. And so we provide that content hub for enterprise tablets. So what is content? Content is anything that you need to work with as a developer. There's generally two types. There's structured content and unstructured content. But the thing about content is it's not code, it's data. And at times, as developers, we'll confuse content and code. And if we keep them separate, they have separate life cycles, it's a lot easier to figure out what to do with each. So Alfresco is mostly about unstructured content, unstructured data. Structured data works really well in a database. It works really well in an XML store, a key value store, because it has that inherent structure, it's transparent, you can read it with a text editor. But unstructured data is a bit harder to work with. It doesn't work well in source control because you can't do binary merges, it doesn't work well in most other places, and these are things like audio, video, office documents, images, anything, you know, engineering files, anything that has a format that you can't open in a text editor, we normally call unstructured content. So as developers, we're asked to deal with these files. People want to be able to do things with the content they build. They don't create content to keep it locked in on a disk or locked in a drawer. They want to share it with people. They want to process it. And so we end up dealing with that, and that's our content-centric application. To work collaboratively, to meet business process needs, and to mix that structured and unstructured content. So this is websites, this is catalogs, this is sales material, this is research and marketing, all that sort of thing, legal compliance, that's all content. So if your business has said to you, I've got a ton of files, I've got people that produce and consume those files, I've got systems that use them, I need it to be easier, then you feel the pain of documents, the pain of content. And of course, you know, in the university setting as a student, you think you never, you know, I thought I knew everything, I thought I had all the answers, I knew how to use a database. You know, what's the first time I get in the real world and somebody hands me content, you know, I have that natural reaction. Let's build it ourselves. I apologize, it's out of focus, but, you know, we're going to build it ourselves. It might take a minute for our soldiers to be ready, for the reinforcements to come, but we can do this. These are all standard solutions. It seems simple. You know, we've done various parts of these in some of our demo projects. We're going to grab our favorite web application toolkit. We're going to get our favorite front end, our favorite presentation framework, mash it together, store some files, have a relational database to track some of the metadata. We're there. We've met our needs. The first question is, where are we going to stick the files? Simple thing to do, and we're new developers, so we're going to do the simple thing, right? We're going to stick it on disk. Or we could do something trendy, stick it in the cloud, have a CAS filer, source control code repository. Oh, binary files, that doesn't work in source control. XML database, oh, we're not dealing with XML, these are images. NoSQL document store might work, but it has some of the same problems as a relational database. What are those problems? Well, relational databases, they're good at text, they're good at numbers. They're not so good at unstructured content and binary content. They're good at things that are static. If your table definition is not going to change, life's good. But if you're changing it on a daily basis or, you know, regularly, relational databases aren't so good. NoSQL databases do a bit better. It has size limits. Most relational databases choke if you're putting in more than a gigabyte or 2 gigabytes in a single file. There are ways for you to point to something on disk, but it gets messy really fast. There's random seek. Relational databases do really well at random seek. They can jump around in that database really well. But if you're trying to stream a 2 gigabyte file, they're not optimized for that. You're going to blow out your caches, and your next call is going to take a long time. And search. Some relational databases know how to look inside of opaque content, but most relational databases, they don't do so well at that. And so it's really valuable to have a system that knows how to, that you can be adaptive for whatever kind of content you're dealing with. But we'll stick it on disk because that's the easiest thing to do. Oh wait, now somebody asked us to worry about security. Oh no, we've got to have a workflow. We can do all that though. Oh, got to transform, got to pull out a thumbnail, got to turn a Word document into a PDF. Now I got to schedule a job for later. You know, these are all simple things to do, but they add up. And when you're at the end, you've got a lot of custom code. But you can do it, right? These are all things we have a general idea how to approach. So if everything goes well, in the optimistic scenario, we get our boat car. You know, it works. It's a boat. It's a car. It functions. Best case scenario, it might be a little ugly. It took a little while to get there, but it works. But most of the time, we get the pessimistic scenario. We get some crazy machine that doesn't actually ever work and is impossible to change. That's where most of my projects ended up. So what's the solution? The solution is to step back and evaluate whether doing it ourselves makes sense. Now, there are cases where it makes sense. If you're dealing with a small number of documents, if you have a small number of users and they're not very concurrent, so you don't have to worry about scalability, if you have a really good idea of your number of integration points and what you're going to be working with and how easy it is to tie into those, and if your business process complexity, if you have a really simple business need and it's very clear on how you're going to work out meeting those needs, you know, it could make sense to do it yourself. Keep in mind time and cost of subsystems and maintenance and all those sort of things. You should also think about your access to off-the-shelf alternatives. That's a nice thing. We're going to talk about some open source off-the-shelf alternatives today. Most of the time, though, it's better to step back and use a content repository because these aren't new problems. These problems have been solved before, and there are off-the-shelf solutions that will do this. So what is a content repository? You take your file and you add some metadata. That's your content. You stick it on the file system. You add some search indexes. You add a way to track the metadata. And you put an abstraction layer in so that you can get that code in and get that content in and out easily. That's your content repository. So there are a bunch of components of how to do this. We call these content services. Most projects are not going to take advantage of all of these. It's pretty unusual to have a project complex enough to need all the content services. But most projects are going to need more than one. And once you get to need 3 or 4, then doing it yourself doesn't make so much sense. Also, most of the time, you're going to start with 2 or 3, and in a year, you're going to need another, and in, you know, another year, you're going to need 3 or 4 more. You know, projects tend to get more complex over time, and content management projects are usually business critical. They take a long time to mature, and they're going to be in production for a long time, so you got to plan for the future. It's for this reason that it's important to have a system that you can turn off the parts that don't make sense for your current project. There are a lot of systems to do that. There's a group called the Real Story Group, and they built this chart. Has a variety of vendors here. It's kind of complex. And that's the point. It's a complex landscape. It's hard to navigate. So what we're going to do today is we're going to give you a tool to help you navigate this landscape. And that tool is a standard API called CMIS. And most of the vendors up here support this standard. So we're going to talk about that more in a moment. So there are open source tools that do this. Alfresco, that's who I work for. Obviously, I think it's a good tool. There's Nuxio, Knowledge Tree, Magnolia. There's one called Jackrabbit. It's maintained as the Apache Foundation, kind of is a lowest common denominator server. There's Plone, which can do a lot of content management type things. It's not an either or. Some things are sort of content management repositories. So that's, since we have access to tools, and since we know people have solved these problems before, we can build on a content platform. And that platform approach is the best practice. So you're going to take the repository, the repository is going to offer you services, that's going to be your content platform, and you're done. Oh wait, you're not done. There's still a bunch of work to do. You need to find the right platform. You've got to do some evaluation. You need to extend the platform with your own business logic. You need to customize the user interface, because odds are it's going to be either very niche or it's going to be really general. And your users are either going to want functionality that's not in the user interface, or they're going to be confused by all the extra stuff that's there and you're going to need to turn it off. Oftentimes, your needs, you're going to need this repository, but you're not going to necessarily be benefited by any of the user interfaces. Sometimes the person who's doing approval on the invoices that are getting faxed into your office, you know, she's going to want to see that invoice and have a yes-no button, and that's it. Doesn't want anything else, doesn't want to be confused. You know, he's not going to want to have to learn what this word means or that word means for him to do his job. So a lot of times you're going to just not use the manufacturer's, the vendor's user interface, and you want to have something to let you write your own. That's the beauty of services. You can do that. But the nice thing is with the platform approach, you get the guarantee, or at least the promise, that your current needs are going to be met, and that the vendor has a roadmap, has a track that they're, is going to meet your growing needs. So over time, as you get asked to do new things, you've got a solution that'll meet that, that'll scale to those needs. There's some important things to keep in mind. You want to keep in mind how fast that platform is moving. Is it a very niche solution, or is it very general? A lot of the time, the niche solutions will give you a quicker time to market, a shorter time to meet your team's needs. But in 2 years, when you need to push into a different department, or in 3 years when your company's pivoted, you're going to have a different set of needs. And so a general solution might take a little longer to get set up, but it'll have that flexibility as time goes on. You also need to be able to scale up and scale down. If your solution is targeted for a really large number of users and you're going to start off with a team of 10, that might not be the best way to go. But a lot of times you start in a single department with a team of 100 and soon you got to roll it out to the university as a whole, you know, 30,000 people. Is it going to meet that need down the road? In Alfresco, we use a word we like a lot called developer ergonomics. That's the idea of how easy is it for you as a developer? What is the developer interface like? How easy are these is interacting with the platform? You know, is it fast and friendly? Open source, you know, this is a free software conference. I'm not going to go into a lot of time talking about the benefits of open source, because that's why we're here. But the ability to know that your vendor's not hiding anything, see if other people have the same problem, participate in a community, it's all just great. And standards compliance. Now that's a big thing in content management. Is the way that you interact with this repository going to be the same as you interact with other repositories and other tools? So it's interesting that the general architecture that we've chosen in Alfresco is very similar to that architecture we talked about a new developer adopting. You know, it's a very transparent architecture. Now the devil's in the details. But you have your repository, and your repository has to stick files somewhere. And we choose to stick them on disk. You're then going to have metadata, and you're going to stick it somewhere. Well, that's what relational databases are good at. Static table structure, discrete bits of data. You know, so we have a database that tracks that, also tracks things like logs and user information, access, that sort of thing. And then you have an indexing service, and it's going to look at that content and do a full text index, do classification, help with searching, things like that. At Alfresco, we use Solr to do that. Now, wrapped around this repository is that set of services. So you're going to need a way to do high availability. You're going to need a way to expose your content as a virtual file system through SIFS, / Samba, through NFS, FTP, SMTP, IMAP, all those sorts of things. By doing that, it means integration's really easy. If you have an integration point that knows how to write to disk, and your operating system can mount a virtual Samba share, then you can work with that repository. And your users don't have to do anything different to have content management. Things like web applications, knowledge portals, web services, REST APIs, all that are key parts of having that service layer. Now, with that service layer, you can then stick this repository into an ecosystem. And that ecosystem can include integrations with corporate systems, publishing to social media channels, having a presentation layer that knows how to pull content from inside of the repository, working on the desktop to create content, mobile devices, web services. And Alfresco, we have a public cloud that complements our private cloud. And so we understand that not everybody wants, you need to have control of your content, but your users want to be able to access it from outside the business. So there's a publication layer to push from within your repository to the cloud and pull that content back. So the idea here is kind of Alfresco specific, but it gives you a vision of how that repository can fit into a larger solution. So let's get to the CMIS API. Wow, I'm going really fast. I hope the translators have kept up. Apologize if they haven't. Okay, so CMIS is the Content Management Interoperability Services Standard. It was created about 2 years ago by a consortium of 30 ECM vendors at a place called Oasis. And the idea is to be a language-independent, vendor-neutral API for content management. So the advantages here is that we like to say that in the 80s, when you had a right to a relational database, you had a right in a way that was specific to every single vendor. But with the advent of SQL in the 90s, you can target that standard. And sure, you might want to take advantage of a vendor-specific feature or functionality. But the majority of what you do and the majority of what you need to know as a developer is consistent through across all these databases. Well, that's what CMIS is for content management. It's a least common denominator API. Now, some vendors have extensions to help you take advantage of features that are specific to that vendor. They can be really useful. But within the standard itself, you can do CRUD, create, read, update, delete. You can do check-in and check-out. We call those library services. You can associate two pieces of content. You can manage permissions with access control lists. You have an idea of policies that Alfresco doesn't take advantage of, but some vendors do. You can do queries, and you can traverse the repository and step through and list directories and see what's there. So all that is in the standard itself. Now, that'll get you 80% there on most solutions, and that's great. It's great to be 80% there. There are two parts to this standard. The first is the actual API, and that there's a SOAP interface and an AtomPub interface. I'm a REST guy. I think REST is the way to go, so AtomPub's great. This is version 1.0 of the standard. Version 1.1 is in testing, and that'll have JSON bindings. And so it's really slick to be able to pull your content in and out with JSON. CMIS also has an SQL-based query language. And I'll show you some examples in a minute, but it makes it really easy for you to find the content that's right for you for what your application needs. Like I mentioned, extensions can really help because you only get 80% there with out-of-the-box CMIS. So CMIS helps you meet some key use cases. You have your repository, and it's going to talk to a client. That client, one example for this to make it really concrete, I work with developer websites, so we have a website that our partners use, and our marketing team produces content. They collaborate around it. They use Alfresco to do that. And then our partners from all over the world are going to get to that content. And because of firewall traversal and some of those concerns, we've got a Drupal application tier that provides that user interface that's easy to brand and make the right way for our partners to get that information. And so that Drupal is a client, and it can peer into Alfresco and pull out the marketing materials that are relevant for that specific page that the partner is interacting with. Pull it out of the Alfresco content repository. The content repository can also push with extensions, so it's not part of CMIS, but you can push to that presentation tier as well. It can also be content repository to content repository. So that's really useful because now you've got a migration path or you've got an integration path. Most businesses have more than one place where they keep content. And as long as you're using Seamus on both platforms, you can have an easy middle layer that handles translation. There are a couple open source projects that do that. One's called OpenMigrate. Or you can, sometimes the two repositories will talk to each other directly with Seamus. And you can also have a client that talks to more than one repository. So Alfresco has a mobile app. It's in the iTunes store, and we'll have one on Google Play before the end of the year, the engineer told me. We'll see how that goes. But that single client can talk to more than one Alfresco repository. So it can talk to the cloud, it can talk to the on-premise system, and if you're a consultant, it can talk to your customer's repository, all from the same UI. And so, Seamus supports that as well. Once your content gets into the repository, then you can meet your workflow needs, your records management needs, that sort of thing, mash up content from multiple repositories, that sort of thing. So that's the beauty of Seamus. So let's get into some of the details of how you'd build one of these applications. So there's three tiers. You've got your content services tier, that's your repository. So you might have Alfresco there, you might have JackRabbit, you might have one of the other open source ones or something proprietary. But on top of that, you've got the Seamus translation layer. So it's either REST or SOAP, and you might have some repository specific calls as well. On top of that, you're gonna represent your content to your users. So Drupal, Python, Java, whatever language you want to use, whatever framework you think is valuable, you can work in the tools that you want to work in and access that repository as a services layer. And most repositories have the ability to pull content from external systems, and that's how you get your enterprise apps in. So your financial team, they're going to be producing invoices, so you're going to have a connection between your services tier and getting your invoices into the repository. Your marketing team, your human resources team, all sorts of groups in your organizations that are generating content, you're going to be able to pull in to that repository. Very few of these enterprise apps have Seamus APIs right now, but I'd expect that within a couple years, a lot of them will, and you'll be able to use Seamus on both sides of the three-tier hierarchy application architecture here. So when you're working with the standard uses some interesting terminology that I thought is worth taking a moment to explain. Your client is that presentation tier. Your content repository is that repository services tier. In between, Seamus talks about a vendor mapping. So that's how, taking Alfresco as an example, you're going to turn the Alfresco internal APIs into Seamus. And every vendor is going to have a different mapping layer that you install on that content repository. And then you have your Seamus layer that you can get out of the box in Java or a couple other places. And that's going to take the vendor mapping and turn it into the Seamus domain model. And then it's going to provide, on top of that Seamus domain model, a number of services. And then your client can access that domain model. So when if you need to consult the standard, that's some of the terminology explained for you. Then you can do all that fun stuff involving metadata and versions and reading and writing and that sort of thing. So Seamus has five types of objects. You have your document. Your document has contents. It has renditions, different ways it can be displayed. It has a version history. You have your folders. Folders are a container. They have a hierarchy. They have a position somewhere in the tree. And they have filing services. So you can put a document in or take it out of a folder. Now, Seamus only supports having a document in one folder at a time. It's part of the standard. But if you need a document, if you need to display a document in more than one folder, you either need to use associations or you can use classification services to provide that virtual view of your content. So relationships, Fresco calls them associations. You have a source object and a target object that are either folders or documents. You have your ACLs for your access control list to handle permissions, and they point to a target object. And then a lot of vendors have an idea of policy that's something the standard is really vague on, to let vendors do kind of their own thing. And policies can be applied to a target object. So these are all defined in the type definition. So this is the class hierarchy. So any Seamus repository is going to give you an object. That object is going to point at property objects. You're going to have a class called object, and it's going to point at property objects. And then inheriting from that parent is documents, folders, relationships, and policies. Now, the powerful thing about content management is you don't have to work with those four types of objects. You can have a custom content model. So your marketing team, they're not working with object, with documents. They're working with press releases. And so you're going to want to take inherit from document and define a type press release with its own metadata. And that's going to be different from your engineering team that's working with API doc. And that's going to have its own set, or customer evaluation, or employee review. All these are different types of content you might have in your object model. So anytime you define a custom object in your content model in the repository, that'll be exposed as Seamus types. So that brings us to Apache Chemistry. Apache Chemistry is an open source implementation of Seamus. It's an umbrella project that lives in the Apache Foundation, and it has a bunch of child projects, each with their own teams. So the biggest one is OpenSeamus. It's got a Java client and client and server project. And so Alfresco, we take that OpenSeamus server and we stick that in Alfresco on top of our vendor-specific mapping. And that way we get all the benefits of bug fixes and scaling and some of that sort of thing. But so you can pull that client, that server, and put it in your own code. It also has a client implementation, and we use that client implementation as well. And then currently there are three language-specific libraries. There's Seamus Lib, which is the Python one. That was contributed by my team at Alfresco, and it works pretty good. And we use it quite a bit for hobby projects. We don't have anything official on our team right now that's using it, but I do know people that are using that in production, and it appears to work pretty good. It's gotten pretty mature now. There's a PHP client. The PHP client library, I don't know anybody who's using the one from Apache Chemistry in production. Unfortunately, we were in a hurry once and we forked it into Drupal, and we need to get those fixes back. But there's a bunch of Drupal modules that take advantage of the PHP client, and it provides a lot of that in the PHP world. And we're going to get those fixes back and keep that Apache one up to date. And there's a .seamus, .NET client as well. I know people that are using it. I don't know who put it together though. Or its maturity level. It's been around for at least 2 years, so I'm guessing it's pretty mature by now, but I haven't personally played with it. So Chemistry also contains the de facto reference for Seamus that's used to test 1.1 features by the technical committee. You've got your server and the Apache Jackrabbit project as well that provides a repository that can be used to test a lot of these things. So time for examples. And that's good. We'll have time for questions. So hopefully you can see okay. Since I'm going to use Alfresco to show you the examples, so I want to take just a moment and show you what the Alfresco UI looks like a little bit so you don't get confused. This is the Alfresco Share user interface. The Share user interface is, in version 4.0, our main user interface, and it can meet general content management needs. But it's built around a collaboration metaphor. And so when you come into Share, you're part of a number of collaboration sites. And there's an example one here. And most people are going to put their content into a collaboration site. And when they do that, there's a number of activities that they can use to collaborate around their content. Wikis, forms, data lists, links, that sort of thing. And you can modify all this. You've got your data library, which is where your content actually lives. But we're not talking about collaboration here. And so we're going to come into the content repository, which is a view underneath that collaboration layer into the content that's actually in the system. And you've got your list of folders here. And of course, you can expose this in a SIFS share, or you can email into there, do all sorts of things. But the point is, there's a handful of folders there. Okay. So out of Apache Chemistry, there's a project called Seamus Workbench. And Seamus Workbench is a great tool for getting to know the Seamus API. And so we put in the URL of our SEMA server. We give it some credentials, and we load the repository. And then it is going to go look in and connect to that repository. So here we are. We got a repository ID. And that's not very visible at the moment. We'll move it over here. So on the left, you've got that same set of folders. On the right, you've got lots of information about the content you're currently looking at. So what's nice here is when you're trying to decide, oh, can I meet such and such a need with CMIS, you can use CMIS Workbench to test and play around and discover how to meet some of those needs. If you're changing your content model and you want to make sure that it's working with CMIS, really quick GUI way to go in and look at those changes. So let's go ahead and create a folder here. There's our new folder. We'll call this FISL. And we can select our content type, our folder type. And so here, of course, anything that's in the content model is going to be displayed here. And so we'll go ahead and create that folder. And when we select that folder, we can then see all the allowable actions. We can actually perform those actions on the folder. We can update, you know, view the properties. We can view relationships. We can see renditions, ACLs, policies, versions, type, extensions. All that stuff that CMIS exposes is here in the UI. So let's go inside that folder, and let's create a document. And let's give it a name, test doc. And we're just going to make it a vanilla document because that's easy. Where's CMIS documents? Here somewhere. CMIS document. And you can upload a file, but we're going to generate content. So let's make a big file. You can set the version. You can do all sorts of things to get an idea of what it's doing. There's our content. If we select it, you'll see a different list of properties. You'll see a different list of actions, a much bigger list of what you can do to it, what's allowed, that sort of thing. So if we go back into Alfresco, and we refresh our repository view. Here's our FISL folder. See, I'm not tricking anybody. It's all right here. This won't display because it's random garbage content. But we can come in. We can see all the actions. We can see the metadata. We can see the history of versions, that sort of thing. So the two are connected. Now, the best part about the CMIS Workbench is the console. And this is a Groovy console. And so sometimes it's a lot easier to do your code in an interpreted language like Groovy. And then once you've made sure you've got it working, you can translate that code into Java and do the compilation. There's some example Groovy scripts here that make it really easy for you to get started. We're going to come here and execute a query. Let's shrink that down a bit. And let's expose our code. So this is all the code necessary to do our query, all the Groovy. So here is that SQL language I told you about. So we're going to do a select. We're going to get the object ID, the name, and the length of that. So you can pull any property you want. You get that variable name out of your content model. And we're going to pull it out from CMIS document. And CMIS does not support joins, but extensions, Alfresco's extension supports joins. For what comes out, we're going to build an iterator, and we're just going to print those properties. So, pretty easy. Let's go up here and run. And it goes through and it prints out all the content in the repository. So, lots of stuff there. Groovy, huh? Definitely groovy. So that's a great way for you to get to know CMIS and start that connection to your application. Okay, second demo. Oh, I forgot to mention. So this is all done on Ubuntu. Actually, I switched to Debian Mint. We're on OpenJDK. We're using Python, and we're using Alfresco Community Edition 4OD, which is the newest version. And you get CMIS Workbench from Apache Chemistry. And so that's CMIS. Okay, let's look at Python. So essentially what I'm going to do is execute all this Python in the terminal, and you're going to see how it works. Python's an interpreted language. It has this really cool concept called virtual environment. When you're dealing with a project, you want to make sure your libraries are stable, and that they don't mix together in strange ways. And so a virtual environment is a way to solve that. You set up a directory with its own Python interpreter and its own package repository, and it'll then you can interact without having to worry about those mixings. And so the Alfresco I'm using is absolutely out of the box. It's completely fresh, no customizations. And the virtual environment I'm using, I was worried I wouldn't have good internet, so I installed it just before I came here. But it's got all it has is these two commands: easy install cmslib, which goes out to the web, pulls the cmslib, and gets into your local Python, and then it will execute the Python. So let me get some things out of the way real quick. Okay, so we're into Python, and I'm going to be flipping back and forth. Hopefully I don't give anybody a migraine. But I'm just going to cut and paste this stuff. So we are going to do a connection to so we do an import of the library. We connect with the admin credentials we used in Chemistry Workbench. And then we're going to get the ID of the default repository. So we have that connection. And it's the same ID we got in Workbench. Next, we're going to get a little bit of, we're going to get a list. Let's get the name first of the repository. So main repository, and then we're going to get a list of the capabilities of this repository. So we know that this is really valuable because not every repository is going to display in the same way, is going to offer the same set of capabilities, or they're going to display the capabilities in slightly different ways. And so your code can adapt to the repository you're working with. So some repositories like Alfresco support multi-filing. Some repositories, Alfresco doesn't support unfiling, which is the idea of putting something in that's not really in. There are a lot of different capabilities that you can query and make sure it's there before your code works with it. And you can also get additional information about the repository. So we can make sure we're working with the version we expect. We can figure out who the vendor is, that sort of thing. Makes it really easy to build robust code. And then we're going to pull in the root folder from the repository. Alfresco always calls that company home. And let's create a new folder. Let's call it CMS demo. So we get the ID back. And if we come into Alfresco and we review that repository, we've got our CMS demo folder here. You can get the name back, CMS demo there on the side. And let's get the properties for a folder. So now we know the creation date. It's easy to get that parsed into. These are properties in Python, so it's easy to use these in your application. You know, who created it? When was it modified last? And any custom metadata shows up here too. So really easy to get that into your application. Let's add a piece of content here. So we start off with a property list. We're only going to set the ID. It's the minimum you can set. You have to set. We gave it a name. We stuck a string in. Now in Alfresco, if we refresh, we've got that document created. And we can even come here and do a preview of what that document looks like. We have all the actions, all the metadata, all the properties down here. We didn't set anything, but we can make that bigger and zoom in. And there's the text we put into it. So, no sleight of hand, all legit. And then we're going to do some check-in and check-out. So we can say, is this checked out? False. Let's go ahead and check it out. Now we come back here and we refresh. And now we get up here. This document's bloqueada. Now I can still make changes to the document because I use the same credentials to check it out. But if another user comes in, they can't make any changes. Let's go ahead and cancel that checkout. So doc cancel checkout. Doc is checked out. So now it's gone. So the little warning goes away. We can rename the documents. Now these are all really basic things, but these are that 80% of most of your solutions. So it gets you pretty close. So all we've done here, title's just a property. We've gone ahead and updated that property. So now we have the new title. And we're just going to close out. Let's delete real quick. Almost out of time. I want to make sure we have time for a question or two. But let's do a quick query just to finish out. So here we've gone and said we're going to look at all the folders, and we're going to pull everything with the name ALF, with the letters ALF somewhere in the folder. And so there's only one document, one directory in there. We can do the same thing. We said FISL. So we created a document with the word FISL in it. And then let's do a full context search. So here we're saying we're going to select all the properties from everything in the repository that has the word name in it. And then we're going to print the name of that piece of content so we can get the name property. And there's a bunch of stuff in there. They're all free market templates. So the nice thing, too, is with Python is that all the standard Python stuff works. So we can display a listing of what's there. We can get a list of all the capabilities that we can have on a piece of content. So when you go to Python, to the Apache Chemistry, I forgot to open this earlier, there's a really great cheat sheet that lists everything that you can do with CMS. This is actually comes off of the Alfresco website. So it gives you all your services, all your properties, all your actions, and it gives you example query languages, or examples of the query language. So it makes it really easy for you to build your projects. So where to learn more? We've got our public CMS server. That's where you get that CMS cheat sheet. You can read the spec. It's not too bad. There's a really good tutorial that shows you how to do all this, the same sort of demo I did with Python, but directly with curl, just hitting the REST bindings. Shows you how easy things are. And Alfresco has a developer conference every year, and last year we had two presentations on this topic. They're great ways to get more detail. And with that, we have time for one or two questions. Anybody have a question?
Well,
e pode falar português e inglês qualquer.
Well, I will try to talk in English. I speak in Spanish. So I'm guessing that with this library with CMSI, I can bundle a library into my application to get an content from Alfresco. Is that right?
Absolutely. So if I was writing a Python application, I would put CMSLib into my Python application, and then I could pull that content out and display it in my application.
Just, my other question is, Alfresco has to run independently in another domain in the same application server, or I can bundle it in the same domain?
So Alfresco is a Java WAR, and so it's easy for you to take the Alfresco jars and stick them into your own application if it's in Java. Alfresco does support JCR, which is the Java way of doing this sort of thing, but CMS is probably easier to use. You just make the calls against localhost. But yes, I personally think it's easier and more reliable to run Alfresco as its own server, even if you have it packaged with your application. You can embed it, but having them run as separate processes gives you some flexibility for how you want to tune it and how you're going to turn things on and off. And debugging for both you and your users is a lot easier if they're in separate processes. But we do support both.
Okay, thanks.
Who else has a question? Yes, sir.
Would you recommend Alfresco for... it seems like the main use case here is a corporate setting, right, for intranet and stuff like that. Would you recommend it to big media portal sites that are facing the internet and dealing with huge scale of users and a lot of customization of functionality?
Absolutely. So Alfresco has 2,000 paying subscribers, well, more than 2,000. We're in 66 countries. And of those, some of them are very large media companies. I'm not a sales guy, so I never know which clients I can talk about and which ones I can't. But the thing to know about Alfresco is that Alfresco is about managing your content during that creation phase and managing that content throughout its life cycle. But Alfresco, we're not worried about displaying the content on internet scale. And so Share works pretty good, that interface I showed, the user interface, the graphical one, it works pretty good for an intranet. There's some universities that use it with, you know, a couple 10, 20,000 people, but it's not Facebook, it's not a Facebook UI, you know, it's not going to handle internet scale. There's a cell phone company in the US that uses Alfresco, and they do the they do exactly like what I mentioned. I don't think they're using Seamus right now to do it. They're going to upgrade and hopefully use Seamus in the future. But they're publishing, once they've marked content, this is ready to push out, they're going to publish that to that web tier, and they're using a Java web tier. And they can also use that Java web tier to do queries into Alfresco for customer invoices. That's the use case. So the customer logs in, they go to the knowledge base, all that stuff has been pushed to that presentation tier so it's cached and scales really well. But when a customer says, show me my invoices for the last 3 weeks, then it's going to do a query into Alfresco and this says, show me this username's invoices for the last 3 weeks and pull those back. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think so. Also, do you have any extensions that deal with semantic web data, like RDF, triple store, something like that?
So semantic web is very much a presentation tier technology. And so most of the time, if you're worried about semantic web, you're going to be using your own front end. I know our engineering teams talked about it, but I don't believe that our Share interface is semantic web enabled. It's generally not intended to be crawled externally. It's very much about corporate control. But if you're publishing that into Drupal, then you're going to get semantic web data or into Wikit, something like that.
Okay, thank you.
My pleasure. So thank you for attending. I'm around for today and tomorrow. I'm happy to take questions. I hope you enjoy the hats and stickers. If you didn't get one, I don't know if we ran out or not. If you asked a question, there's two people asked questions, come up here. I got a book for you. It's the Alfresco Professional Development book. I showed you how easy this is. So the internet here is a little bad, but if you can get enough of a connection, you could bang out an application and get it on the web by the end of the day. If so, let me know and I'll list it on our website. So, thanks.